Hale Varsity Magazine presents the Hale Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hale Varsity.
Day by day! Day by day! We get better and better!
We get better and better!
We get big, big!
We get big, big!
Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Great to have you in on a Wednesday. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning. Tomorrow, Blackshirt Jay returns. Busy one today. Jerry DiNardo in 15 minutes. Craig Ames with the Nebraska Golf Association as we talk Wilderness Ridge Golf Show. And then next hour, Brandon Vogel of Hale Varsity, Brad Edwards of ESPN. So loaded up. I was up late. Maybe many of you were up late. I got to ask you, are you exhausted? Are you frightened? Are you joyous? Are you excited? I mean, how about the poll results? Washington number 4, Ohio State number 5.
They got snubbed.
Listen, that's dominated the world today, rightfully so. If you're upset or you're joyous, good for the joyous people. If you're upset and frustrated and angry, I'm sorry. All I can do for you is talk Nebraska football. I'm not going to throw hand grenades or wipe tears politically today. Sorry. But we're here to talk plenty of Nebraska football. Big weekend, big game. 466-377-6800-825-5865. Plenty to get to. Secret Husker unveiling later today in the show. You know your Secret Husker name. You call Nick and Greg tomorrow. You have Minnesota-Nebraska tickets. Boom. That's on the way. Plenty of insight, not only with college football selection, but, you know, where's Nebraska going next? And what are the questions I heard a lot from whatever channel you were watching last night? Well, what's next? I don't know. I don't know what's happening Saturday night for Nebraska and Minnesota. What's next for Nebraska? And, you know, kind of a theme yesterday in practice with Coach Banker was really didn't have an answer. Didn't have an answer defensively. And, you know, one question I have for what's next with Nebraska as it applies to Minnesota, first and foremost, maybe we'll find out about Tommy Armstrong today. Doubtful. Probably tomorrow. Maybe you'll have a better grip or grasp on offensive line health. Some guys are practicing that weren't. Good news if you're a Nebraska fan. But what I got to know now or pre-kickoff Saturday night as to the answer, what's next? Because it's on your mind, what's next politically and from the football arena. I got to know if the offense and defense can be bros again. I got to know if they can work in unison together. Because guess what? They've done it all year until Ohio State. Here's the conversation that maybe went on. You're Nebraska's defense. You get done with that game Saturday night. And they're going to look at the offense and say, hey, bro, dude, you dropped me in enemy territory with a copy of Hustler and a pocket knife to try and go get a machine gun stand. And the offense's response, so you had a knife. Meanwhile, the offense is going, well, we're playing, trying to get you the lead. And it's not us against them, but I can just see this conversation after an epic beating where the offense didn't help the defense. Defense got scared and then got blown out. And I'm not doubting anyone's commitment or manhood, but they got frightened in the big moment. That's what I keep going back to. Until you beat Ohio State, you freak out against Ohio State. The offense is, look, man, we're trying to get you points. The only way it's happened this year has been throwing the football. And I know Nebraska's run game's been okay. You've had some fourth quarter closeouts where you've been able to run the football against Wisconsin. And I know Nebraska's been able to run the football against the Illini. And listen, you have been an incredible team for the most part, finishing drives, getting points, finding a way to do it. And against Wisconsin, it was there for you. But then to carry it over to the Ohio State game, nothing worked. And to answer what's next for Nebraska, I got to know if the offense and defense can complement each other, period. What's been going on? Defense has been getting takeaways. Defense has been getting after the quarterback, not last week. Defense has been making one-on-one tackles. Defense has been great in space. Offensively, again, Newby does his thing in previous fourth quarters. Tommy, when it's third and long or third and whatever, and it's time to respond or get an answer drive, again, Ohio State is not part of this conversation. But when Nebraska was still 7-1 and not 7-2, the offense found ways. And the way they've done that, if you want to get real honest about it, is throwing the football. Oregon, they ran it to win. Tommy, I understand, ran to win. But the offense hasn't looked the same or even remotely reliable post-Northwestern. That's when you had Farmer go down. Gates has been dinged. You're going to have Neville back, and he's been... I know Conrad's not been great, but he's at least been there.
Yeah, Neville's been bad.
Okay. So you have not looked anything like yourself since Northwestern. How did you beat Indiana? Big pass play to Brandon Riley to get a field goal. Big pass play to seal the deal with Stanley.
And a pick six by the D.
The Illinois game, you ran it, fine. How'd you loosen Purdue up? Well, you never did. You threw deep, told your guys to go make one-on-one plays. And how'd you get back at it against Wisconsin? Well, you were in 3rd and 7 a hell of a lot, and you were 50%, 9 of 18. It was Riley. It was Stanley. It was Westerkamp. Passing set up your touchdowns. That's a point of contention this whole week. Jay and I started it Monday with your game plan, sticking with throwing the football versus trying to run and get out of Dodge. You are what you are right now. And can the offense and defense get back on the same page? That's what I got to know moving forward as to what's next for Nebraska, because if Riker's playing, his best strength is throwing the football. If Tommy's back, based on how the O-line's played, and it could be a much better, more efficient, more steady offensive line with, say, Gates is better. Foster is getting back to it, but really Farmer's the guy along with Neville. Say that right side gets okay, or at least you raise up level of play and ability when you get a guy like Farmer in there. Say you get closer back to that Northwestern time frame in the season, then you can get back to complementing each other. Defense can keep doing their thing. Offense can go get points, theoretically, because you have better help up front. Here is what is for real. Defense is going to have to go out there Saturday night against an extremely physical offense after doing so much heavy lifting all season long in the shadow of a train wreck and allowing 62 points, and dig deep and get stops and stop the run and play big boy football and not let Minnesota, who's straight up one-dimensional for the most part, own you, win a bar fight. Can the does defense have it in them? And conversely, if you're the offense, put a plan together, and they're going to try and do it, some identity-type runs, to help each other out. If Nebraska is going to finish this year like you think they should, you'd buy all day 10-2. Well, that's really in danger right now. How do you finish the year? And does Ohio State derail you for Saturday night? Does it derail you for Iowa City? How do you finish this year? Because it's been a good run. You've had momentum. You started out 7-0. You lost to Wisconsin, and you're right there, and you're feeling great about your football team because you lost to a big-time opponent on a stage that was that allowed you national respect. Then you turn around, flip it around, and it was freak-out mode again because of who you were playing, and you didn't react well. So can the offense and defense get back together and be friends and help each other? That is so important to me. And the defense needs a tip of the cap because they've been doing a lot of the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
The offense has at least been able to finish ball games and drives and get enough points. And this whole back and forth yin and yang really started against Oregon, where the offense sputtered, defense got some stops, then the offense took over and finished. That's going to be your formula to finish out the rest of this month at 3-0 and get to 10-2. We'll talk to Vogel here in an hour about where Nebraska could go bowling. But that's what I got to know. Now what? And can the offense get healthy? Can they be better? Can you survive also with a backup quarterback Saturday?
Yeah, and for me, I think the defense can get right back on pace to where they've been all season. Because look at the offenses you're going to be facing the next three games. Minnesota, Maryland, Iowa. They're not a high-scoring, potent bunch.
That's fine. There's a fatigue factor.
For sure.
And maybe the breaking point was last Saturday, and you've hit reset already.
In Minnesota and Iowa, those are physical offenses, but they're not going to kill you through the air, so you should be able just to make them one-dimensional. Maryland, you know, they're just the competition they haven't played.
You might take getting killed through the air instead of 14-play, 80-yard drives where it's 9 minutes a clock and it's a constant body blow. Mm-hmm.
But with that, I feel fine about the defenses with who our next three opponents are, but with the offense, I'm really worried. I think the defense is really going to have to carry them, even if we get Neville back. Great. He hasn't really been great all season. Farmer would be help. But look, if you don't have Tommy and you have a banged O-line and with Riker Fife back there, it's going to be tough to scrape together points, and that's what you're going to have to try to do.
Well, and defensively, Perella, Banker, the gang are going to issue the challenge. You know what you got to do Saturday. Mm-hmm. You know what you got to do Saturday. You got to man up, own up, and be the aggressor and make the plays.
If there's ever a time for Pearsonell or Trey Bryant to make a play,
you need some special teams sprinkling. And also, you need a little help. I said offense and defense need to be friends again. Well, special teams, either punting and coverage and return, that third phase has got to come through. And we'll see what happens with Nebraska. I don't think this team's tapped out. I think there's some real questions about where you are mentally trying to bounce back. And it's not like Minnesota frightens you or scares you, but it's a physical toll ball game that how much you have left defensively. And from a defensive mindset, it's easy to say, and Jade Echo would, he wants it on him. Give it to me. Mm-hmm. Let's do this. This is our job defensively. And back to the offense getting better. Will guys step up around Riker? And you haven't played together on the offensive line all together since Northwestern, really. Wisconsin, forgive me. You had Farmer back until he got rolled up on against Wisconsin. So that's an issue. We'll see where Nebraska goes offensively. And it is going to change how you feel about the season if they don't finish out unbeaten. You're not at Ohio State's level, clearly. The last two games have kind of gone either way. Wisconsin's won them when it comes to your West Division folks. You've beaten Northwestern. Could have beat them a year ago, but let's be frank, if you're a Nebraska fan, it's a game you really just got to pay attention to and do your thing year in, year out. You're better than them. And then there's Minnesota, who quietly, like Northwestern, is a game under 500 in the series against you. You and Nebraska's 4-2 against Northwestern, obviously, but heading into this year, they were 3-2. They're 3-2 against Minnesota. And Minnesota doesn't screw around. They aren't flashy. They know who they need to go get and recruit, and they are incredible at developing guys. And they got 5'7", 6'6", 300-pound dudes on the line that want to smack you. And defensively, they got some guys that just have great Scandinavian work ethic. I mean, or whatever their nationality and background and heritage is. Don't care. Point is they have the same dude there on the line of scrimmage, year in, year out, and they just want to take it to you. And they felt pretty good about doing it until they didn't a year ago. So we'll see. What's next? Football-wise, we'll know more at the end of the week, but what's next is the offense needs to help the defense out. And conversely, defense knows that this is on them for Saturday night. Hail Varsity continues. Jerry DiNardo next.
Welcome back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show. Here's Chris and Jay.
I love Jerry DiNardo. I almost went to work for him one time. We had a nice Italian dinner at a nice Italian restaurant in Bloomington.
Ah, yes, Bloomington. Coach DiNardo roamed the sidelines there. You watch him on BTN Live. And, of course, the Big Ten tailgate. Coach Jerry DiNardo with us at Jerry DiNardo on Twitter. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Chris. Thanks.
Appreciate you giving us a few minutes. Now, what do you do as a coach the following week after suffering such a bad loss, similar or like Nebraska did at Ohio State? How do you deal with it?
Well, you know, you have to address the issues. I just think, you know, you might change the way you address the issues. You know, I'm guessing there's a lot of things that went wrong in that game for Nebraska that the players know. There's probably no reason to harp on them. You might not even show the tape. You might make a cut up, you know, just have some plays taken out and show those plays because maybe some things came up that hadn't come up before. You might watch it as a full team instead of a unit. You know, you might change it up a little bit. You might go in front of the room and in the old days burn the game film and not bother with it and move on to the next game. I mean, there's a lot of different ways of doing it. You know, Mike's been through this before. He's a veteran guy. You know, some coach would say we're going to handle it the same way as we handle every game. But I think there's probably some type of adjustment this week.
There is. And what wowed you most about the result? Was it more about Ohio State or more about Nebraska?
Yeah, I think it was more about Ohio State. You know, they looked like they looked against Oklahoma. They hadn't looked that way since the Oklahoma game. They were pretty explosive. They were obviously very ready for the game mentally. They had made a big deal about the crowd, about the uniforms. I mean, they took this as a big game. They expected this to be a very close game. And when you prepare like that and you have that mind frame, you know, if things go right, and obviously Tommy got hurt and, you know, things didn't go so well for Nebraska, and it was a little bit of a perfect storm, I think, against Nebraska, so I don't think the score really reflects the difference in the two teams.
So you got the Gophers coming here on Saturday, and they are a quiet 7-2. What have you seen from the film to make them a quiet 7-2?
Yeah, TJ, I've been watching them most of today. Well, they're pretty physical on offense. You know, those two running backs are really good. I don't know if they're both going to be healthy. You know, Matt Leinart is a little limited in the pass game. You know, I think that's probably their weakness on offense. If Nebraska can force them to play them left-handed, meaning, you know, make Leinart throw the ball to win the game, I think that's probably an advantage. On defense, You know, they gave up an awful lot of big plays against Purdue in the pass game. Certainly something that Nebraska's able to do in their pass game. So I think this is a good matchup. You know, obviously Tommy's the X factor. I don't know if it's been announced that he's going to play or not. I have not heard that. But certainly a game that Nebraska can line up with or without Tommy and certainly be competitive and be in position to win the game at the end.
I don't know when we'll know about Tommy. Thursday is probably the day, maybe in an hour and a half or so when practice gets done. But let's assume for the discussion that Riker Fife is your guy on Saturday. Coach Riley was pretty adamant about finding some identity runs, one or two that they can knock out and lean on and run over and over again that are successful. So there's some balance back in the offense. But Riker's strength is throwing the ball. Riker's strength is not throwing the ball on the run. And do you think, if you're the offensive coordinator, coach, and you've been one and won championship doing it, do you at this point in the year figure out what will work with Riker, or do you kind of just run your playbook, because the playbook's much different this year than last year, and they didn't adapt the play calls last week at all to Riker's skill set. They were calling the same plays for Riker that they'd use for Tommy's skill sets.
Yeah, but Chris, you know, most of that offense Riker can run. I mean, I think the only thing that limits him is perhaps some of the run game stuff that Tommy actually runs himself.
Right.
But, you know, some of those movement passes that they put in for Tommy, Riker can do that. That, you know, you don't have to have the running ability that Tommy has to run those plays, all the pocket stuff, all the play action stuff off of the tailback. When you started this question and asked and said about Mike wanting to have some identity runs and all that, I have to tell you, as I'm watching the Minnesota defense, I'm saying to myself, they run really well, they bust coverages, run right at them, because if you run away from them, they're probably going to catch you. So run right at them and then throw the ball, you know, deep against them. That's basically what Purdue did. But Purdue doesn't have the running attack that Nebraska can have when they want to be a tailback team. So I think in my mind's eye, see exactly what Mike Riley is saying, the way to attack Minnesota. And I think he's exactly right. And I don't think Riker Fife instead of Tommy Armstrong could be a major issue. I just don't see this game plan being dependent on Tommy Armstrong's legs, and I think Riker can do everything that Tommy can do except for what Tommy does with his legs in the run game.
Sure. So if Nebraska's going to go at it, the way to go at Minnesota's throwing the football, and then obviously some running straight ahead. A couple more minutes. Jerry DiNardo with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Coach, let's talk college football playoff for a minute. And Ohio State, they have wins at Oklahoma. They could end up unbeaten post-Penn State. They have a loss at Penn State that's in the top 10. They've won at Wisconsin in overtime. If push comes to shove, do you think they could edge out Washington and get in that top four, assuming they – I mean, if they beat Michigan, yeah, they jump in. But say they're an 11-2 team with that head-to-head over Wisconsin. Any shot in your mind of two Big Ten teams staying in that four?
Yeah, I think the best chance for the Big Ten to have two teams in it, obviously, is if Ohio State wins out and the only loss that Michigan have would be a close loss to Ohio State and Ohio State wins the championship. Mm-hmm. If Michigan wins out in regular season and Wisconsin beats Michigan in the championship game, then Wisconsin would go with two losses if they could continue to win. So I think there's a couple combinations there. One sends Ohio State and Michigan to the championship. The other sends Wisconsin to the championship and Michigan as the second pick if it's a close game in the championship game. So, yeah, I think that's all possible. But when you're talking about two teams from one conference, that means you're leaving out another couple conferences. So it's not entirely under your control. But I do think Wisconsin wins out and wins the Big Ten championship, they'll go with two losses for sure.
Jerry DiNardo with us. Coach, when you look at some of the games this weekend, what do you think of Penn State at Indiana. Is that a danger zone for Penn State? They've been playing great. Conversely, Iowa's season's not been what they wanted, but they got Michigan under the lights.
Yeah, well, you know, I think Indiana probably has Penn State's attention. I think Penn State's a pretty focused team. I mean, I watched them yesterday. Man, they look good offensively. And they look good on defense, too. But, I mean, they are rocking and rolling on offense. And we know Indiana's defense has improved. But I think Penn State's offense will give Indiana's defense everything that they can handle. You know, the Michigan offense is a good matchup for Michigan against that Iowa defense. You know, Iowa's pretty simple on defense. You know, they don't change much. There's a million formations coming at you. I was on the sidelines for Michigan against Maryland. And, you know, my only evaluation of Michigan had been a bunch of tape, and that's sterile and it's clinical. But I was on the sidelines, and I came away from the Michigan game being much more impressed with them in person than I was after watching a bunch of tape on them.
Coach, to end, and thanks for a few minutes today, do you think Nebraska mentally will have trouble bouncing back against Minnesota? They need to, but the hangover effect is a question with how bad that was last Saturday.
Yeah, you know, every team's got its own personality. You know, again, you know, Mike's been through this before. These guys have been through this before. They're pretty resilient. You know, I think maybe fans have hangovers longer than players. But we won't know until they play Minnesota. I mean, Minnesota's a good team. I think Nebraska's a better team. And so, you know, it's at Nebraska. Mm-hmm. So, you know, shame on the players if they can't get themselves back. I think they probably will. Because this is a great opportunity. And if they don't, you know, with three losses, they're most likely going to be out of the Western Division hunt. And they obviously want to stay in it. So I'll be surprised if we don't see. And again, I think last week really was not the rule. It was more the exception.
Okay. And lastly, 30 seconds, Coach. Do you think with Nebraska and what they have to play for, specifically the job the defense has done this year, Do you have concern about fatigue defensively at this time of the year? I mean, the defense has been doing a lot to keep opposing offenses off the field. Score's been down, and you really didn't have the offense helping you out much last week. Is the defense in danger of getting too many miles put on them here at this point in the year?
Sure, they always are. You know, you cut practice back. You know, once you change the clocks, that's the sign to cut practice back, one, two, maybe three periods, and you got to marry the game plan. I mean, one of the advantages of Mike not calling the plays and not calling the defense is he can manage this game, and he can say to his offensive coaches, you know, slow it down a little bit. You know, let's keep it on the ground a little bit. I got a defense over here that needs a little bit more rest and so on and so forth. So, you know, the veteran head coaches like Mike, they marry the game plan. They understand. The unselfish coordinators, when the head coach says slow it down, you slow it down. When the head coach says let's blitz them and get the ball back to the offense, that's what the defensive coordinator does. So, you know, it's a team effort. You got to back off them in practice. And, you know, sometimes the offense has to be a little bit more conservative if it means giving the defense a little bit of a rest.
Coach, we'll catch up soon. Thanks for your time today. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks, TJ.
Awesome stuff. Jerry DiNardo with us, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, at Jerry DiNardo on Twitter. And we'll see if that's a little bit better suited this Saturday. Good insight from Coach. You run at Minnesota. They're pretty quick on the edge. And you get after them throwing the football. All right. We'll see if that happens. Safe driving demands your full attention. One of every three traffic fatalities in Nebraska alcohol-related. Many of those drivers involved buzz while driving. Remember, you drink, you drive, you lose. A message from the Nebraska Office of Highway Safety. Brad Edwards coming up. Brandon Vogel on the way. The Wilderness Ridge Golf segment just around the corner. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
That thing is big, Jay. That thing looks hurt, Jay. Oh, man, pull back up, Jay. Jay, we could get some big money for that.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Big thanks to Coach DiNardo, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Be a subscriber today. Premium content, amazing community for Nebraska fans with HailVarsity.com. It's that time for the Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Find your friends at Wilderness Ridge, WildernessRidgeGolf.com, 402-434-5106. Go see your director of golf, PGA professional Chris Thompson, or director of instruction, Mike Shuhart. Shuey is gone this week. And we welcome in Craig Ames, and he is with the Nebraska Golf Association. Craig, pleasure to speak with you. Thanks for a few minutes. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. How are you doing tonight?
Doing outstanding. And you know what? This fall golf weather just never gets old, does it?
Yeah, you know, it's unbelievable. I was out the other day just running a couple errands from the office and drove by. We're located in Omaha, so drove by a couple public facilities, and it's just gorgeous out. I can't believe it. It's fun wearing shorts in November.
It is. It's awesome doing that. And with all these night games, plenty of time for fall golf in the morning, whether you're in Lincoln or in Omaha. And Craig, tell me a little bit about your background. If folks are just catching, I mean, a lot of golf fans know you and know how amazing the Nebraska Golf Association is. But if a listener's catching you for the first time, give me a little bit of your background, if you could, and what you like doing and what you do with the Golf Association with Nebraska.
Yeah, you know, most of my time is wrapped up with this organization. Obviously, I love the game. Don't get to play it a lot because we're busy promoting the game. So people aren't familiar with our organization. We're strong partners with the USGA. So more or less we're like the USGA on a state level. And I didn't play competitive golf personally. I played soccer when I grew up in Northeast Nebraska, and then went to school at Lincoln. Worked a couple jobs, Hillcrest Country Club on the food and beverage side, and then Country Club of Lincoln in the golf shop, and just kind of fell in love with the game, and had a major in advertising, and just wanted to do something where I could use my skill set and stay involved, and kind of fell into this job in 1997 and became executive director in 2001 when Virgil Parker, our previous executive director, who was a longtime sports editor of the Lincoln mm-hmm. paper, passed away that year. So I've been in that role since. So yeah, I just love the game, and we run a lot of championships. Basically oversee the handicap system at pretty much all the clubs in the state, handle course rating, do a lot of education on the rules of golf. Just pretty much anything that's golf, we're involved.
Love it. Craig Ames with us here on the Wilderness Ridge Golf segment, and of course, he is in charge of the Nebraska Golf Association. Now, Craig, tell me how you juggle the setup here when it comes to the major amateur golf tournaments in the state and getting that put on top of just the exposure that you're able to provide so many young golfers and so many just avid golfers.
Our primary focus, this year, when Jay contacted me about being on the show, we're celebrating our 50th anniversary and we just had our 108th Nebraska Amateur. So if you do the math, 108 years of the state amateur and 50 years of an association doesn't really add up. But the NGA was actually started probably, I think it was 1905 was the first amateur, and went defunct in the 50s and then reorganized in 1966. So that gets us to, according to our bylaws, our 50th anniversary. And during that time period, the Nebraska Amateur was always around. And so when they reorganized, two of the things they wanted to do was give the state amateur kind of a shot in the arm and then also do a focus on junior golf. And, it's kind of ironic when we're doing all this planning for this gala we have coming up here next Friday that, so those are some of the things that are still, at the nucleus of what we do. So, the state amateur, which I mentioned, we just had our 108th one this year at Omaha Country Club, and then our state match play, which was at Firethorn. Are two pretty much major events, but we do 11 state championships. We conduct qualifying for 8 USGA national championships, have an interclub program, fall junior series, a lot of select team events, partner with the PGA section to put on the junior golf tour. So on the junior golf side, you know, that junior tour offers over 70 events during the summer and pretty much a 2-month window. And then the other thing we're proud of is this four program, which offers discounted golf for juniors, so they can play golf for $4, and our foundation subsidizes those rounds with an agreement with 40 some golf courses statewide. So
that's outstanding.
Anyway, that's a lot of information.
Mm-hmm.
but yeah, you know, when I started, I always joke it was kind of like 6 months on, 6 months off, and now here I am in November trying to grind over you know, this event next week where we're bringing Ben Crenshaw in to speak, and
yes,
and then you know, we take a little time off for the holiday, and then between Christmas and New Year's, but yeah, with all that activity going on, you know, there's a lot of planning involved, so it's very, very busy. So,
Craig, tell me a little more about the 50th Gala with the Nebraska Golf Association. Ben Crenshaw, a name that golfers and casual golf fans know, but I mean, just such a big name. How can folks, if there's availability, be a part of it next Friday? And how were you able to get hooked up with Ben?
Yeah, so, you know, you think Nebraska golf, and there's not a lot of big names that have come through, you know, that play professional golf. And Ben was just a name that we thought kind of resonated because, you know, he designed Sand Hills, and yeah. Sand Hills is recognized, you know, by a lot of national magazines as the top modern golf course in America. And it's so highly regarded. And you know, Ben's he's just a great storyteller, and you know, he's won two Masters and was captain of the Ryder Cup team in 1999 when they had that comeback at the Country Club at Brookline in Massachusetts. That was such an epic event. And if you ever listen to him, you know, and it seems like every April he's associated with the Masters. And, you know, in particular, I think he was dubbed kind of the host of their past champions dinner now going forward. And he played his last Masters in 2015, but, you know, went back this year. And so his design part, his history in the game, you know, from winning two majors to captaining a Ryder Cup, and then his association with, you know, now with Jordan Spieth, who's one of the top players. He's just got a lot of great stories. And so, you know, we thought he'd be great as a marquee spokesperson. And so we work with Dix Youngscap, who obviously knows Ben from Dix, the managing partner at Sandhills. And he put us in touch with Ben's agent and just kind of put it together. So it's something I wouldn't want to do every year. It's a lot of work. But, you know, I think we've got, you know, we'll have you know, close to just between 500 and 600 people in the room.
Okay.
You know, we can hold plenty of people in that room. So I think if there's interest, you know, people can go to our website. So not only that night will we focus on Ben telling stories, which will be the marquee or the highlight. We'll also have a little segment where we celebrate our history, that 50 years. And then we'll also recognize our players of the year this year, which we normally do at an end of the year banquet. But we punted on that this year to do the gala. So,
Wow. Craig Ames with us as the Wilderness Ridge Golf segment, and the Gremlins are still around. We'll wind down hour one, get him back on the horn, TJ. Tell him we didn't do that intentionally. Hour one winds down next.
Forget to catch any segment of the show?
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Find the podcast of the show on HailVarsity.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
All right, all right, all right.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Back with you, winding down hour one, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Big thanks to Craig Ames, Nebraska Golf Association, Ben Crenshaw in Omaha next Friday night at their gala. So find out more at the Nebraska Golf Association website. Thanks to Jerry DiNardo. Coach is thinking Nebraska can run straight ahead at Minnesota. And then maybe throw it over the top, let those wideouts do their thing. Brad Edwards of ESPN College Game Day will be with us in 10 minutes. Brandon Vogel of Hail Varsity will join us. Secret Husker. Okay, you want Minnesota, Nebraska tickets with our friends in the morning, Gregeth and Smith, locally. You will need to tell them Broderick Thomas around 11 a.m. or so. That is when they'll ask for Secret Husker. Broderick Thomas, the Sandman. How nice would it be to have Sandman off the edge? You see this with Alabama. They're using old Bama players on the practice squad, as in scout team. So who's the guy who got drafted? Trent Richardson. Trent Richardson's running against current Alabama players because there's no rule against it. And, you know, Trent's not held onto the football nor stuck with three or four NFL teams now. So why not go back home to Tuscaloosa? Now, Broderick's in, do the math. Broderick's pushing 50.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing. Because he's you know, drafted in part of that 89 draft with Aikman and Deion Sanders and Barry Sanders and Andre Bad Moon Rising and who else? Thurman Thomas. So 88 was his senior year. So he's probably over 50. He's probably 50, 51, something like that. Broderick was awesome. He was a sixth picked overall to Tampa. Played 10 years in the league. Played with Dallas. He spent too many years doing time in Tampa back before Tampa was, you know, Gruden friendly. So Broderick Thomas, there's my diatribe, is your Secret Husker. Tomorrow, you'll be asked to call in and name Broderick Thomas as your Secret Husker with Nick and Greg. And then you'll have Minnesota, Nebraska tickets. They will give you a Secret Husker name tomorrow that you need to listen for us here on Hail Varsity in the 5 o'clock hour. We'll probably get that figured out. Ask you to call once Coach Barnett's done with this.
Does Trent Richardson get paid for that?
I don't know, but it doesn't matter. He can. Bama's got 7,000 people on staff.
It's just part of the scout team.
I'd take Broderick Thomas at 52. Off the edge. If anything, he would mouth off because Sandman was so good at talking it, and he backed it up. He was so good at talking it. It'll make your O-line better just for the sheer fact you want to shut him up.
Yeah.
And a 52-year-old Broderick Thomas, I think he was probably born in 66, something like that, so I'm probably right on. Yeah. Bring him in. Bring them all in. If Bama can do it, damn it, Nebraska can do it.
Pick them up.
Why not? All right. What's next for Nebraska? To know that answer, you need to know what's going on at quarterback, and you need the offense and defense to help each other out. It's been a couple of games since that's happened, specifically back to the Wisconsin game. Brad Edwards, college football around the world next.
Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity.
Hey, bad day! Hey, bad day! We get better, better! We get better, better! We get beat, beat! We get beat, beat! Boom, beat, beat! Boom, beat, beat!
Hail Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Back with you, Hour 2, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Into Hour 2, Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, thanks to Coach Jerry DiNardo, Big Ten Network, with us last hour. And don't forget, the Home Football Friday location is at Tailgate. We do with Hail Varsity in the Rail Yard, 4 to 6:30. Come see us this Friday, getting you ready for the Gophers. Welcome in with College Football Game Day and ESPN Radio, ESPN Insider, Brad Edwards, at J. Brad Edwards on Twitter. Brad, how are we doing this week?
We're doing pretty well. I'm getting revved up for a trip out west. I'm going to Seattle to check out the Washington Huskies, the new number four team in the nation. I tell you what, now that they finally put Washington at number four, I'm not sure what we're going to talk about for the next few weeks, unless they were to lose, then things might get interesting again. But for now, it's about as clear cut as it ever has been with a month to go in the football season, at least in the brief time of the playoffs.
No, it is. And Washington and Washington State, I mean, that thing looms. It looks impressive, but you also have SC, who has kind of righted the ship back at it. We'll kind of go around the college football world. But, Brad, when you look back at this year and there's still three games left for Nebraska to kind of finished their season strong at 10 wins, maybe 11 years. It'll be the first time since 01 that it happened. They'd won 10 before, not long ago, but 11 would be pretty impressive for Coach Riley and the guys. And what do you take with you here and now as you look at Nebraska? Do you think of Nebraska in the context of how they played against Wisconsin, or do you think of Nebraska and how they looked under the lights against Ohio State? What impression sticks with you most?
Well, I would say Wisconsin, just because I don't believe Ohio State is 60 points better than Nebraska any more than they were 60 points better than Wisconsin 2 years ago in the Big Ten championship game. It's just one of those things that happens sometimes in football where things snowball and, you know, they just you can't reel it back in. But in terms of, you know, what I'll think about Nebraska a month and a half from now, I mean, mm-hmm. it's going to have everything to do with how they respond to that game. Mm-hmm. Because if, you know, if they go in the tank and they, you know, end up maybe losing two of the last three, then I think that, you know, people are going to have a tendency to look at what happened against Ohio State and they'll say, hey, see, this is who they really were. Whereas if they bounce back, then you'll say, you know what, it was a good team that just had one bad day, and really all it proved is that they weren't a national title contender, which I think we all knew that all along. And so they can't let the margin of the defeat affect them. They've got to come back and take care of the rest of their business. And like you said, they've got a really good chance to get to 10, if not 11 wins.
Brad, would you have LSU behind Nebraska like the playoff committee does?
You know, that's a tough one just because LSU has an extra loss. Not that I think the loss column should be determining everything at this point. To answer your question, I think I do have LSU ahead of Nebraska on my own ballot. But I think the committee's issue with LSU, and it's a fair one, and I guess it's really not a whole lot different for Nebraska because the game Wisconsin was indeed a loss, is that, you know, you're looking at teams that have had, I guess in Nebraska's case, two chances to make a statement. In LSU's, they've had three, and they haven't come away with wins in any of those games. I mean, one thing if you had, like, you know, four tough games, you won two, lost two, whatever. But when every, you know, top-notch team you've played has beaten you, then there's still a lot missing there on that resume. And I think really the difference between the two is that you know, is LSU's lost three really close games, and while Nebraska's lost one fewer, one of them was an absolute blowout. And so I guess you could go either way on that, but I personally have LSU ahead because I don't think that if they played head-to-head, I don't think that Nebraska would be able to score very much on LSU. And outside of a select few defenses in the country, I don't think there are many teams that could stop LSU from running the ball. And that's something that's going to be tested this week when LSU goes to Arkansas. But at least for now, I believe that they can run it on most teams. They just can't run it on Alabama. I think we've proven that over the last few years.
What did you think of last Saturday night? Because you guys were in Baton Rouge, in Tuscaloosa for that game. And what Bama's on this pedestal? They deserve it. They're really good. They're deep. They're talented. Is there anything that Bama does that you don't like? And that's not just to you, but I mean, they're not misstepping at all. Auburn looms, but are there any cracks in Alabama, I guess, is my question moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think you saw it the other night. It's that offensively, they have some limitations in the passing game, and that was why LSU felt comfortable kind of loading up to stop the run. And they, you know, they weren't just putting a bunch of guys in the box, but they were bringing heat. You know, they were just sending guys from a bunch of different directions on every snap because they were trying to disrupt the timing of the running game, which obviously for the first time with Alabama this year includes the quarterback. And, you know, they did have a few chances to make plays in the passing game. But the thing with Alabama is that most of their passing is close to the line of scrimmage, and LSU was just causing so much havoc there in that area that they're, you know, they really weren't able to complete anything. And then finally in the second half, they were able to make a couple throws downfield. But that's the formula for beating Alabama. I don't think you're going to be able to, you know, outscore them in a shootout. But if you can play good enough defense to keep their offense from being able to run the ball, then you can keep the score down to the point where you could probably make a few more plays than they can. And look, I don't think it's any secret that LSU does not have a great quarterback, and Alabama is certainly going to play teams down the road that have a much better quarterback than Danny Etling. It might not happen until the playoff, but they will, and when they do, they better be able to score more than 10 points, because if they don't, their season's going to be over.
So we kind of thought the Big 12 was out of the college football playoff, and rightfully so, but come the rankings last night, they're sitting at number 11. Number 11 is Oklahoma, sitting at 7-2. Do you give them a shot at still making it, or not really?
I wouldn't say that they're completely out of it, but I think if you really stop and think about scenarios that could get them back in, it's really hard to come up with one. I mean, let me start with Louisville at number 6, okay, a one-loss team, and it's hard enough to come up with it for Louisville. I think that for Louisville, they need – obviously, they need to win out. I think they need Alabama, Clemson, and Michigan all to win their conferences, because if that happens, then there are no other teams in the ACC, Big Ten, and SEC that have fewer than 2 losses except for Louisville. And so they don't have to worry about anyone else going head-to-head with them for that spot. And at that point, I think they just need Washington to not win the Pac-12. Okay, which how realistic that is, I don't know, but I think that's kind of where Louisville sits. And so then you start to ask the question, okay, what would it take for an Oklahoma to get up there with 2 losses? I don't think Oklahoma is going to beat out Louisville if it comes down to those 2 teams. Because let's be quite honest, Oklahoma has not beaten anybody. And even if they beat Oklahoma State, in my opinion, they've still beaten nobody. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think there's any win you can get in the Big 12 that's worth anything. And they played 2 good teams out of conference. They lost to both of them. Neither one was competitive in the fourth quarter. And so as I start to break it down, I think Oklahoma's best chance is for Louisville to lose to Houston. And I don't know how likely that is, but outside of that, I really don't see a realistic path for Oklahoma to get in the playoffs.
So Oklahoma and the Big 12 are hurting, and would the committee look really hard at taking 2 Big Ten or 2? Well, I don't know that there's 2 SEC, but say
no. I think it's just the Big Ten or ACC in terms okay. of chance to get 2.
Yeah, and so whose argument's better, Ohio State, Michigan, or Louisville, Clemson?
Yeah, let's look at the scenario where Ohio State and Michigan went out until they play each other, and then Ohio State beats Michigan. If the Pac-12 ends up imploding and someone other than Washington is the champion, then if it were to come down to Michigan versus Louisville for the final spot, I think Michigan gets it, and I think it's a pretty easy decision by the selection committee because of the way they do this. I mean, they look at a resume, and they look at certain criteria. Obviously, in this case, neither one would be a conference champion. They both would have been pretty dominant over the course of the season. They both would have a close loss. I'm assuming that Ohio State wouldn't blow out Michigan, even though they did last year. But if they had both a close loss on the road to a playoff team, then everything's equal at that point. But then I think where it gets away from Louisville and gets in Michigan's favor is that Michigan would probably have 3 wins over ranked teams to 1 by Louisville. Florida State's the only team they've beaten that's going to end up in the top 25, and that's assuming FSU doesn't lose another game. And then the other deciding factor is that Michigan has easily handled every lesser team on its schedule. Every average to bad team Michigan has played, they have blown out. Even the Michigan State game, which the final score was single digits, Michigan was in complete control of that game the entire second half if you watched it. Whereas Louisville had those 2 inexplicable games against Duke and Virginia where it came down to the final minutes, and they were really, in danger of losing both of those games. And to me, that separates those 2 teams, is just the ability for Michigan to blow out every lesser team, whereas Louisville blew out most of them, but they still struggled against 2 of them.
So the last of the unbeatens in the group of 5 is Western Michigan. They sit at 21. Is the best they can do if they go 13-0 the Cotton Bowl?
Yeah, I think so. And look, if you're Western Michigan, I think you still have to be a little bit worried with Boise State sitting right there behind you. Just, I think they're 1 spot back. Now, Boise State would have to be a conference champion to be a threat to Western Michigan, which means that Wyoming would have to lose two more times. And I believe they have San Diego State and then at New Mexico, which San Diego State is arguably the best team in that conference, if it's not Boise. And then New Mexico is a team that I think is one of the few that has a winning record in that league that, I think they would have a chance. And if it came down to that, if Boise ended up winning the division, they're going to play San Diego State in the conference championship game. And if they beat San Diego State, that's going to be a better win than anything that Western Michigan is going to get in the MAC championship. And so the fact that they're this close to them already, I wonder if Boise would be able to jump over Western Michigan if they both end up as conference champions, which, at least Western Michigan has that in their favor, which is all they have to do is win the rest of their games. They don't need help.
Brad, real quick, about 90 seconds here. Your thoughts on Washington and USC. Also, are you concerned about a Nebraska bounce back against Minnesota?
Yeah, I guess so, because of the question at quarterback. I mean, you guys know more than I do about it, but if Armstrong's not able to go, I'm not sure where that leaves them. I mean, I don't think Minnesota's a great team, but Nebraska's obviously not the same team without Armstrong in there. So we'll have to, kind of wait and see on that one. In terms of Washington and USC, look, as much improved as USC is and has been since they made the switch to Sam Darnold at quarterback, I still think that winning at Husky Stadium is too high of a mountain to climb for anyone else in the Pac-12. Maybe they'll prove me wrong, but I think Washington is just such a solid team with good talent. Maybe not quite USC talent, but I just think they're a much better team overall than USC in terms of the way they play together and play within their scheme. And in front of that crowd, I just can't see them losing.
They are extremely talented, and yeah, that home field, man. I remember Nebraska heading out there many, many years ago.
But that was when I was in college. I remember that game.
Yeah, it was real loud. It was a Saturday night ESPN game, and they did the decibel thing, and people's eardrums blew up. It's impressive. Brad, we'll catch up again. Thanks for so much of your time this college football season, and we'll talk to you next week. Appreciate you.
All right, thank you, guys. Have a great weekend.
You too. Take care. Yeah. Going out to Husky Stadium, man, that place is echoey, Puget Sound, and then the overhang is it's loud, and they have something to cheer about now.
Mm-hmm. We were back there in, 2009 was the last time we were there?
Ooh, that's right. It was they hosted in 11. They won out there, like crushed them, like 62 to – they put up 60. It was like Taylor's first road game, and they smoked them.
Yeah.
Killed them. And then they got to play him again in the Holiday Bowl. Yay. Well, high five Brandon Vogel for some bowl projections here coming up next. Brandon Vogel, Hail Varsity, obviously. But, yeah, Nebraska's done a lot with Washington, 2010, 2011. Prior to that, you had him in 97, 98, because Nebraska went out there in 97 when they beat him when they were number two. It's the last top 10 win Nebraska's had on the road. And then also in 91-92, Huskies won the national championship, a share of it in 91. Mark Brunell and Billy Joe Gunrack. Hobert, you want to talk about a ginger quarterback? Hobert, puke. Sorry. It was like the first night game my dad took me to.
Yeah.
Nebraska's up at halftime, and Derek Brown's running over Steve Ettman. Google his name because, again, urine diapers when Steve Ettman's the best thing since sliced bread on the defensive line. Walking knee surgery. And then in 92, they went out there, and Tommy started like three games later because Mike Grant and the guys went out there, and Perella played in that game. He was great. Him and Terry Keneally on the road. The all-white unis was prominent in 92. Brandon Vogel's up next on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Subscribe to Hail Varsity Magazine. Call 1-855-3-HUSKER or go to HailVarsity.com/subscribe.
That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing!
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Concussion protocol and the process of dealing with an injured player on the sideline. Your Jock Doc Wednesday coming up in 15 minutes. Thanks to Brad Edwards. Welcome in Brandon Vogel of HailVarsity.com and Magazine. And Vogues, your write-up today and beyond with hot reads on HailVarsity.com is incredible. I can't pull it up because I have the biggest piece of crap internet server in America, and it's been that way. And I'm going to whine and moan, as Jim Carrey would say in Liar Liar. I've threatened it. I've reset it. I'm all alone here. I've been all alone for an hour and a half, and I'm extremely pissed. How are you doing?
Doing okay, I guess. Now my internet works, so at least I've got that.
And listen, I take notes. I research. I'm well prepared. But some things that just go Groundhog Day on me, I can't take anymore. So,
what?
Go ahead.
Well, you know, we saw in the election, you know, numerous polling places had to go to paper ballots. The computers, you can't always trust them.
Me and Belichick are on the same page when it comes to tablets. Mine's going in the garbage.
Bill.
Speaking of same page, does the offense and defense become friendly again with Nebraska football? I started the show off with what's next because people were asking it politically. I asked it from a football standpoint for Nebraska. What's next? And to know, as in you finish out the year 3-0, you need your offense to complement your defense, defense to complement your offense, like has gone on every game except last weekend against Ohio State. You were there in Columbus. Do you think the offense and defense will help each other out Saturday?
Yeah, I do think they'll get there just because, you know, the Ohio State game was what it was. A shocking result, really. Not because Ohio State won, but how, which, you know, I think most people are sort of at that. And I've been surprised at the number of national people who are sort of at that spot where they say, well, you kind of just have to throw that out. It's not really a reflection of what Nebraska is.
See, I thought Nebraska would get killed for it.
Yeah, I did too. I did too. And they have it. And, I mean, people have seen this from Ohio State before. They sort of always have that capability. And I think they had the motivation to do that coming right on the heels of the first college football playoff rankings. So all of that aside, like, Minnesota's going to be a defensive challenge for Nebraska. I mean, it's not like this is a get-right game for the Nebraska offense just by nature of the opponent. They're going to have to go out there and earn it. I think some of the players returning on the offensive line is probably the biggest reason for encouragement there. They've been tested, obviously, over the past couple of weeks. So if they can come out and have a good game, I think Nebraska's resiliency, that's the part that I'm not too worried about. Because we've seen it, you know, over 21 games, minus maybe last week. Nebraska has been that. So I think they'll be okay. It's still going to be kind of, I need to see it first because it hasn't been there for, you know, a good 4 or 5 weeks now.
Brandon Vogel with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine at Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter. Now, Vogues, if you're Danny Langsdorf, and you and I spent time talking about this last week, specifically Saturday morning, about crumpling up his masterpiece, right? At what point does he lose his mind again in reference to trying to run the football? Because he's been blasted for only running it 6 times, and I get that. Doesn't help your defense out. In the same sense, your only success and what's won you games this year has been the passing game. I know Nebraska's ran it. I know they've been balanced, but the big plays that have ended up either getting scores or setting you up for scores have been in the passing game all season long. It's not been the run game aside from the fourth quarter against the Illini. And Langsdorf said, screw it, I'm not running the football anymore because you can't run the football. He said he had to throw it. That's what they went to. Does that happen again Saturday?
I don't think so. Mike Riley's comments on Monday were very telling. Like, where's Nebraska's run game at? Riley essentially said, we need 2 runs that we know are going to work. We need 2, and they don't have 2 right now. I understand sentiment of sort of like burning clock in that game against Ohio State, but
Nebraska's straight handoff game hasn't been good anyway. You remove Tommy Armstrong, the running threat. Like, if you were to think what their identity runs were the past 3 or 4 weeks, they're probably Tommy. Armstrong runs, yeah. Not running back runs. So you lose all of that, you know, and it's not just being able to line up and run it into the line. Like, all of your plays that are then built off having some of that success there, all of your constraint plays, screens, that whole thing, it's all out the window. And when you've got Riker Fife, you know, he's a better passer than he is a runner. You're down 40 points or however much it may have been. It just kept ticking up like a pinball machine. Why not throw it? Yeah, you know, it was sort of lost at that point anyway. Maybe, yeah, you save your defense 3 minutes, but I didn't really have a problem with it in the second half. And I think it is a reflection of there's just not a ton that's working for them. They've got to find a couple of those, and they're going to have to do it against one of the better run defenses in the Big Ten this week.
So let's say Armstrong is out for Saturday's game and you're going with Riker Fife. If you're the coaching staff, would you get some packages ready, maybe with Zach Jollerton, maybe some Wildcat stuff ready?
Yeah, I would. And I would actually, if Tommy doesn't go and Nebraska's not able to run it straight ahead, which is basically what your run game would be with Fife, I would be very surprised if Darlington didn't get a series or two, just because, you know, he is sort of that guy. He can give you that running threat. And I also think there's something, and it's, you know, there's no way to sort of put a number or anything on this, but just the kind of guy that Darlington is. Like, if you're in a spot where things aren't going well and you need a spark, Darlington has always been the guy who has been up for anything and may give you some of those intangibles. So, yeah, if Nebraska gets to that point where the run game's not working, Minnesota's just able to sit back and worry about defending the pass, it wouldn't surprise me at all if Darlington went in.
Vogues, anyway, Nebraska can sneak into a Cotton Bowl berth versus some of your projections as you go through the bowl matchups, and it looks like Nebraska's slated in the Outback Bowl against Florida. Maybe they go to the Holiday Bowl against our favorite pirate, Mike Leach, who has a talking pirate in his office, and the sign on his door is even better. You're either coaching or letting it happen. The Rose Bowl's Ohio State. If they don't beat Michigan, you flip-flop Michigan and Ohio State playoff versus Rose Bowl, and then there's the Orange Bowl for Wisconsin. Can Nebraska move Penn State out if they finish at 10-2, or does Penn State have that since they've got the head-to-head win over Ohio State?
Probably, because that's a better win than Nebraska will have finishes 10-2, whether it wins.
What if Wyoming catches fire?
it may already be the best win, although probably put some stock in Northwestern. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Cotton Bowl is going to be tough because that's totally an at-large. So the Cotton Bowl takes the top-ranked Group of Five team, and then basically they get their pick. I think it's going to be hard for Nebraska, given the team that it plays, to climb all the way back up to where it would really be in range for that. Although maybe, I mean, if you're 10-2 and both your losses are to a top 10 teams at the time on the road, that's not a bad resume in itself even if it's lacking sort of that marquee win. Mm-hmm. But you would probably still need a Penn State loss there. So it seems like for the Big Ten to get four teams essentially in year six, things would have to stay, I think, about where they're at right now.
Penn State's lost, 49-10 on the road in Ann Arbor. And then they were getting crushed, and then they came back week two or three at Pitt. Pitt's a pretty good squad, but they're 7-3 type Pitt, I think. Again, if the internet was working here, I'd tell you for sure. So that's a great conversation. Yeah, head-to-head is going to trump it, but no pun intended there. Head-to-head is going to make it in Penn State's favor, but I don't know. If, say, Penn State loses again, does Nebraska move up, or is Cotton Bowl going to take somebody else?
Well, it'll largely be a function of where they're ranked, because I believe those bowls are limited there. You can't just go and take the team that you want. You got to go in basically some sort of pecking order there. So, you know, if Nebraska were 10-2, they would be ahead of a 9-3 Penn State team. I don't think there's much doubt about that. It's just who else would be first in line there. because I don't think the Big Ten definitely has a stranglehold in that spot. Although with four teams in the top 10, they're certainly the most likely at this point. Kind of the only real conference, mm-hmm. I think, that would qualify for that right now.
You got about 90 seconds here, Vogues. With the Gophers coming in Saturday, do you have a stat or number for me for what makes them so best and why they're 7-2?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a classic Minnesota team. I'm actually going through the numbers right now, working on my weekly preview for that game. And they defend the run. Not a very explosive offense, but they're kind of efficient. They're efficient enough, basically. So the big one is run stopping, but the really big one, the one where they're sort of one of the best teams in the country, and this is a weird one, is just field position. And, you know, that sort of comes in that comprehensive game. It's offense, defense, and special teams. But it's really big. Three of their last four games, their average drive has started 60 yards away. So that's the opponent's or your 40-yard line, which is unreal. So watch that one. It'll be a good indicator, because it always is, of how teams are playing overall. But I think when you know that coming in, it may influence your decision-making a little bit. Maybe you don't go for some of those fourth and ones, depending on who's at quarterback. Watch how Caleb Lightborn punts. You can't give Minnesota just a 60-yard field.
I'm freaked out at how well they defended Penn State's offense. Now, this is before Penn State got super confident and got rolling with the Ohio State win. But, I mean, that was Minnesota's game to half. And it was overtime, and they were up 13-3 at half. And that's what freaks me out about Minnesota rolling in here. They let one slip away on the road late afternoon. Well, they let two slip away, especially if Nebraska's wounded. Something to think about. Vogues, we will run you down, my friend, for the forecast, and always love talking with you. The Stat Six-Pack will be available soon for you folks who love Nebraska football, and Vogues does such an awesome job. HailVarsity.com. Be a subscriber. Be a part of this premium Nebraska community. HailVarsity.com. Vogues, be good. Have a good night.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot. Good stuff from Brandon Vogel. Good stuff from Sauter Heyman. Still time for you to get that 1-carat diamond for $100 a month. 12th and O downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion, Lincoln out west in Grand Island. Go see Rick and Sauter Heyman for that 1-carat diamond, SauterHeyman.com.
Want to be heard?
We know he's not. Let him finish.
Call 402-466-ESPN or text HAIL to 88474 with your message. Chat with us on Twitter at Schmidt_radio and JMore44 and TJ_Henning.
Who wants to have some fun?
Now it's back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday. Dr. Brandon Seifert back with us. You know, Dr. Brandon, a lot's been talked about in the NFL and in college regarding player safety, specifically when it comes to the brain. Dr. Brandon, you've been in medicine a number of years. You've been on sidelines. You've been a person to give care and support to injured athletes, not only at Lincoln Orthopedic, but also on the sidelines at different levels. Let's get into just reacting to serious injuries first on the sideline, and then if there is head issues, the protocol that goes into clearing a player to get back to action.
You know, obviously the biggest thing when you're dealing with serious injuries in the sideline is, you know, making sure that you, as the team physician, you get out there, you take control of the situation, you get everybody calm, especially the athlete himself, if the athlete is still, you know, conscious. But the team, you got to take control of the situation, get everybody calm, and then figure out quickly how to assess the situation, figure out exactly what extremity you're dealing with, or perhaps if there's a head or neck injury, and then you go from there and essentially direct the care. You know, if it's more of a serious injury, you know, kind of reversing course a little bit. You know, what's really important when you're taking care of these teams and they have an athletic trainer who, you know, spends every day with them and knows them well, it's important that you allow them to do their job. You know, oftentimes I have more of a kind of a hands-off approach with the sideline stuff initially. If somebody goes down, let the athletic trainer go out there, take care of them, assess them, and usually go from there. And obviously, you know, 99% of the injuries that happen, they're not severe. ATC can definitely take care of them.
And then you have situations where things look very serious right away, you know, a bad-looking hit, looking like maybe there's a head or neck injury, and those sometimes are pretty easy to figure out right away, and we just run right on the field and start assessing those right away. And so kind of a, you know, visual assessment from the sideline.
Dr. Brandon Seifert, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking sideline protocol and dealing with serious injury and also assessment when it comes to how serious the injury is and also clearing a player to get back into action. Dr. Brandon, let's talk about head trauma and if a player loses consciousness, how does the trainer first and foremost approach that, being cautious of the situation, obviously because you're worried about spine and neck as well?
That's probably one of the most challenging situations to be in when you're out there on the sideline is, you know, somebody who one has a head or neck injury or in particular, you know, is unconscious. And so, you know, as a provider, the most important things are, you know, your airway, your circulation. And so first you want to, you know, make sure they can breathe okay. You want to make sure their airway's okay. And you want to think about protecting their neck. If they're unconscious, obviously they can't take where they're hurt. And so your first thing to do when you get out there and somebody's unconscious is have people around the support, try to establish a line of communication with the athlete who's down, you know, to get an assessment of the situation. And 99% of the time, if somebody is knocked unconscious, usually within the first 30 seconds to a minute, they come around. Most of the time, they come around really vigorously and are kind of swinging around wildly as they come to and wondering what happened. That's the typical case. Sometimes you have somebody that's a little bit slower to respond, so they lose consciousness, and it takes them a while to kind of get their bearings and get moving along. But usually within the first couple minutes, that happens. We start to get really worried if somebody, for example, is unconscious for, you know, almost up to 2 minutes, or somebody is unconscious and when they come around, they're just real sluggish, they're real slow, having a hard time articulating what's going on. Those are the ones that we tend to really get concerned about, and usually the ones that, you know, if they don't perk up in, you know, 30 minutes, seconds to a minute, we'll send them off to the ER to make sure with other imaging everything is okay. So, and that's a tough call. You know, that's definitely a judgment call. But those are some of the things that we look for, at least initially on those assessments. Diving further into your question about, you know, how do you assess them? So if you have somebody who's unconscious, obviously what you want to do is make sure that airway's okay. Make sure you take care of, you know, spine precautions. And so at some point you're going to want to bring them onto their back while protecting their head and neck, and then get a better assessment, and that puts you in a better position to do something with their airway if you needed to do something as drastic as that. Those things are important.
Dr. Brandon Seifert, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. If someone gets knocked out, does that mean they are not always concussed? If you get knocked out, I would think you'd have some sort of concussion, but that's not the case, is it?
Loss of consciousness automatic puts you in the concussion category. Automatic.
Okay.
So that's a, that's a hands down, you know, no brainer, and that is also, you know, written into the rules. But especially, you know, it's a law essentially written into it. So if you lose consciousness in a game, you're done. You're done for that game for sure. It's a, you know, bona fide concussion, our book. And so that's kind of where that all starts. Again, that's usually not the case. Most of the time with concussions, they're subtle injuries, and sometimes it's kind of difficult to assess if somebody's really had one. And oftentimes athletes either A, don't know they've had one, or B, kind of know what the symptoms are, think they probably had one, and then will essentially not tell us. Maybe we didn't see the hit, and they may try to hide it because they know they don't want to, you know, be out of the game. And so those are some battles that sometimes we have to fight.
Let's talk about the protocol to get a player back or keep them off the field. What are some of the steps, Dr. Brandon, that need to be proven to you for a player to get back on the field?
So as we roll these kids, you know, through these concussion protocols, the biggest thing is there's a test out there called the impact test. That's the big test that kids will take that kind of sets up a baseline for memory and concentration. There's kind of a whole gamut of academic things, you know, neuropsych type things that are included in this test. So we'll take a baseline, which then we can go back and compare to that when they take another exam, for example, after a, you know, suspected concussion, which gives an example of, you know, are they close to baseline, which is really what we're trying to figure out, is getting kids back to baseline. So what we'll do is, so for example, kid gets a concussion, you want to wait a good 24 to 48 hours to take that test again, and essentially we don't really want the kid to take the test unless they're at a point where they feel like they're not having any symptoms, they feel pretty much normal. Obviously, if you take it as symptoms, you're going to fail the test, and it's kind of a waste of time to do it. And so 24 to 40 hours usually can do that. Once you take the test, number one, if you take the test and it shows you're at baseline and you feel like you don't have any symptoms, and there's a kind of a visual motor test that will run with the update to make sure their balance is okay and that kind of stuff, there's battery tests will do. They pass all three of those, which they can do, you know, within 24 to 40 hours of the concussion. Then we'll start them into a graduated program that takes anywhere from 3 to 5 days, typically 5 days, where you start back into light activities. So day one, we would do just some easy walking if they feel good, maybe just some, you know, light jogging, no resistance training. Next day, we'll ramp up those activities. They're probably not really sports specific on the second day. If that goes great, no symptoms, feeling fine. Then the third day, we'll actually do a little bit more sports-specific activities, but no contact. Again, looking for symptoms to show up if they're feeling great. Fourth day, progress them on to feeling good, high-level activities, and then potentially think about some contact if they're feeling great. But typically, we don't introduce contact until about the fifth day is typical. And then if they do well with contact and practice, then they're clear to play the next day. So that's about a 5 to 6 day course of getting back for our contact athletes, and that's really the right approach to take.
Dr. Brandon Seifert, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. Dr. Brandon, thanks for a few minutes today.
Yeah, sounds great, Chris. You guys take care.
Welcome back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show. Here's Chris and Jay.
One final time on Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine. Thanks to Jerry DiNardo today. Thanks to Brad Edwards. Thanks to Brandon Vogel. Good stuff. TJ Henning, Chris Schmidt. Tomorrow, Jay Bird will be back. Get him run down. Get him ready for Minnesota. Bill Dolman, the Pride of Fairbury, because we're on the road Friday. And Gary Barnett. So a lot to get to. So news on Tommy Armstrong with Hail Varsity on Twitter. Armstrong, will he be available Saturday? Riley says yes, but he's an optimist. And the rundown here, and this is good stuff from Brian Christopherson of the Journal Star, too. Armstrong has progressed normally, but not cleared yet. He's got to do some on-field work tomorrow, and then he's got to pass a test, and then he can play. So there you have it. There you go. I like Riley being an optimist. And what I say, Monday he ain't playing. I'm going to just wipe that off the tapes and say, yeah, it's all good. If he's ready to go, he'll go. Listen, I think he's moving around fine, and thankfully for his sake and the family's sake, he seems okay. Mm-hmm. But good stuff from Dr. Brandon on just what goes into concussion protocol. And what goes into a scary injury situation on the sideline. So great to run him down. I clear you to head to the tailgate on Friday. As Hail Varsity back on the road, we are down in the rail yard. Come see us 4 to 6:30. We'll give you a chance at Nebraska, Minnesota tickets, give you a chance at Husker gear, give you a chance at awesome stuff from Sauter Heyman, as in you can qualify for the Oris Grand Prize watch giveaway, his and her. So a matching set of watches that's incredible. Craft beer from Longwells and K&Z distributing, a craft beer tasting bar, as well as great stuff from the folks at Triple B Screen Printing. Kidwell also helps make it happen. The Rail Yard, ESPN 1480, Brian Health, Emeritus Renz Display. And we want to see you down there. 4 to 6:30, Home Football Fridays. Special guests to be announced, but we've been pretty blessed this year with the likes of Calvin Jones and Danny Noonan. Also, Mitch Crank, part of that 85 Bears Championship. Who else did we have? Well, Charlie McBride kind of came to say, hey, Wyoming week.
Blake Lawrence.
Blake Lawrence is awesome. He was there. Action Jack Gangwish was on hand. And also Jerry DiNardo, Brock Ewart.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of the who's who. It's not Lil Wayne picking LSU, yeah. But that's okay. We wouldn't. We'll do a forecast, but you'll get to see and meet Uncle Nate from Gary Michaels, likely.
And there, Klausburn was even in person.
He was there. I'd say let's try and pull Amir, but I don't know his rehab schedule from the foot injury and when's Detroit's bye? Does it coincide with the Maryland weekend? It'd be too much to try and get Searles down here, even with pizza bribery.
Mm-hmm.
He's got guard and tackle duty, likely. Again, good for him. Okay, we are done. We are out. You miss us, log on HailVarsity.com or iTunes. And be a premium subscriber now to the best Nebraska community with HailVarsity.com. TJ Henning's awesome. I'm Chris Schmidt. We'll talk to you at 4 tomorrow with Hail Varsity Radio.